I'm Allison Kulo.
And I'm Doug Wells. Welcome to Mound Money on KPCW.
Driven to succeed under constant pressure, entrepreneurs and business leaders alike can be tempted to exaggerate their strengths, minimize weaknesses, and bend the truth. The expression, fake it till you make it, is a popular mantra many of us recommend and use when we're in a situation where we may be unfamiliar. At the surface, the phrase is well-intentioned, but when you look below at its roots, its underlying meaning gives one permission to lie, to twist the truth. At what point do the actions associated with faking it to make it result in lies? And to what extent do those lies ultimately hurt our chances of making it? In her new book, Make It, Don't Fake It, Leading with Authenticity for Real Business Success, author Sabrina Horn explores ways to achieve business success with integrity. Horn's fake-free advice will empower readers to disarm fear, organize risk, manage setbacks and crises, deal with losing and loneliness, and create a culture and brand designed for long-term success. Sabrina joins us this morning. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Well, good morning to you all. It's great to be here.
We are very excited to have you this morning. So everyone's familiar with the statement, fake it till you make it. And it feels like a positive statement to tell someone, yet your book focuses on how that philosophy can lead from acting to lying. Can you shed light on this perspective?
Sure, happy to. So it is true that fake it till you make it has some distant origins in cognitive behavioral therapy that date back to the 1920s. Acting as if was a technique developed by Alfred Adler, psychotherapist, to help people gain confidence. It was a form of self-help where patients were told to essentially emulate the behaviors they wanted to exude until they became a habit. But you get into trouble when you cross the line and you start to do and say things that are at the expense of others for personal gain. Example, exaggerating the truth about what your product can do to win a customer deal, or not owning up to mistakes to investors, lying on your resume. These are all forms of faking it. And the reason it's so bad, and it's the worst business advice ever, is because the truth always comes out. And when it does, you'll be exposed, ruin your reputation, set yourself back, and ultimately sabotage your own success.
So when I first heard you were going to be on the show, I was really glad, because like you, I don't like that term. And there's a fine line between faking it till you make it and what I say is imitate what you see that works until you make it. You've got some other phrases in your book that you share that you think are a healthier way to get to the point of you're not where you need to be yet as a leader. And you know, how do you communicate? How do you present the aura that you need to while still being authentic? What phrases do you prefer instead?
Well, I kind of like the title of my book, Make It, Don't Fake It. But, I like to suggest that leaders disarm fear and organize risk by seeking information to know what is unknown. I like to suggest that they have what I call a 60 minutes episode with themselves, right? Like, ask yourself the toughest questions that you really don't want to answer and then come up with viable responses. And flex your muscles with contingency planning. Ask yourself, what's the worst thing that can happen and how I can recover? All of that will let you operate with a little more confidence, greater resilience to manage through turbulent times, which we've been through in the last year.
So I know we'll explore a bit more about how the book looks at ways for us to get out of that mindset. But I guess I go back to the question, this has perpetuated since the 1920s. At some point, has it perpetuated because there's been success? You know, why do we keep saying this if truly it is futile?
Yeah, well, it's really because it's been mutated through social media. I mean, what was originally kind of a tongue-in-cheek little quip just permeated our culture and business environment. And there was even a TV series called Fake It Till You Make It that never made it to prime time.
There you go. Proof yeah. positive.
Yeah, there you go, right? And so it was all about how all the actors on the show could fake each other out by lying. And so now it's like Air. Everybody does it. You do it and you don't even think about it. The bottom line is it's easier to cheat and take those shortcuts than it is to operate with integrity. Integrity requires that you have to deal with reality and face the truth. And, you know, what do we know about the truth, right? It can hurt. Reality can be really harsh. So if your product has a flaw and you have to do a recall, or the market's in a downturn and you have to do a layoff, you don't want to maybe deal with that. You stick your head in the sand. You look the other way. You pretend. And all of that is faking it.
You know, I say if it was easy to do the right thing, everybody would do it. So the reality is when you're struggling with a decision like that, that's why we look up to the people that make the right decisions, because it's so hard to do. Another thing that's hard to do in business is deal with the reality. You know, every day you're not going to have this amazing series of wins. The reality is you're probably going to have a lot more losses than wins. It's important that your wins have a bigger impact than your losses. But you devote a whole chapter to your book. You call it Leader and Loser Both Begin with the Letter L. Tell us more about how leaders should deal with losses.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite chapters, actually. I think it's important for leaders to learn how to rebound and quickly from losing, because the truth is you're going to lose quite a bit when you're a leader. And what I like to do is a couple things. First of all, you've got to be really grounded in your own core values. What do you stand for? You know, the vision's still there. The value proposition is still there. And you live to fight another day. And not even when everything lined up perfectly and you didn't win the deal, you know, that still happens, but there's plenty of fish in the sea because you've got a good culture and solid values. The other thing that I really like to do, which is a learning exercise, is to just do a post-mortem, particularly after a really big loss. And you get everybody in the room not to point fingers at all, but to sit down, with yourself included, and figure out what went wrong, what you yourself could have done better, and ask for feedback from your team, and kind of draw everybody in by being vulnerable that way. Ask what they need and what you can provide so that the next time around, maybe you got a better shot at winning the deal. And the key from that is then to put those ideas into actual business processes. Otherwise, the exercise was for naught.
You mentioned the involvement of the team and being a leader. You know, being vulnerable feels more difficult than in other situations. What does a leader show those members of their team when they are vulnerable, when they show that they don't know all the answers or that mistakes have been made?
Yeah, it's a common myth about leadership that you have to have all the answers. I think humility is a superpower in leadership. A great leader is comfortable knowing what she doesn't know, has no problem asking for help and admitting mistakes. It's that kind of open-mindedness that draws people in. It levels the playing field. And I think it's actually a requirement in today's more modern, people-centered, less hierarchical organizations.
You, I mentioned one of your chapters in the book, Leader and Losers Both Begin with L. I also want to talk about the chapter that you end your book with, which is called The Founder's Curse. And it talks about, you know, just the bond that a founder has with the idea of the company, or the bond that an author has with his or her book, which is a great thing. It can be the energy that makes an idea, that takes an idea from just the beginning stages to a powerful company. Think Jeff Bezos. and starting with the idea of Amazon into what it is today, or Apple computers would be another example. There's also a downside to that special bond, which is a potential blind side to what's wrong with your company. Tell us about that and what founders can do to minimize that blind side.
Yeah, it's actually more common than you would think. When you're particularly a founder, but it can also affect just CEOs who are very passionate about their companies, you have these blinders on because you think your baby isn't ugly. And so you don't listen to feedback, you don't take advice, whether it's about your product or your team or even yourself, and you don't seek improvement. You just stay the same. You even can miss good opportunities to take advantage of perhaps buying another company or forming a new partnership, or you miss some of the hazards and threats that might be coming your way. And I've seen this a lot in Silicon Valley with startup founders. What you can do about it is to build yourself a good safety net of mentors. And these are the people who are going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear, and will help you when you're a little way out over your skis and help you stay grounded. The other thing, of course, is to just make a commitment to being grounded in reality, to look at what other companies and other CEOs have done, either their mistakes or to build successful organizations, and try and stay away from those bad stories and emulate yourself after the good ones. All the good ones are based on being open-minded and staying authentic.
Within your book, you talk a lot about kind of these hurdles that CEOs have, and one of the chapters does focus on CEO loneliness and how it can chip away at one's confidence, and you talk about the safety net. But I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize that they're in that moment until they're in that moment.
Right.
Why does CEO loneliness create a negative pattern? And what can be done to pull yourself out of that?
So if you're a CEO, by definition, there's only one of you, right? So there's no peer for you to talk to in your own company. As a CEO, you're also chief decision maker, which in itself is a lonely act and a tough one when you have to make unpopular decisions. You're constantly solving problems and crises that can wear you down. It can cause anxiety. And you feel isolated from your own employees because you're the boss and they don't really want to hang out with you after work. So as this eats away at you, right, you can start to feel paranoid. It chips away at your confidence. And it can even develop into imposter syndrome, where you don't feel like you deserve the success you've really achieved, which is a vicious spiral to go down. What you can do to avoid this is to, first of all, acknowledge that it exists, and to, secondly, foster connection. Connection is essential for mental wellness for anyone. So yes, it's those mentors, but also seeking peer groups in the industry or through third-party organizations. I like to do something called watching myself in my own movie, where I'm actually the person behind the camera and I'm visualizing, how do I want to come across in this situation? How do I want to feel included? How do I want to go out and make new connections? And that takes some of the anxiety by pre-imagining things out of reality. I also like to recommend that you find opportunities to express gratitude and to teach and mentor others, because the act of giving is so fulfilling.
Yeah, no, gratitude is so important. It's a theme that I talk about often on this show. The other thing you just shared was, how do you want to be perceived by others? And as you were sharing that, I was thinking to myself, this sounds like advice a publicist would give me. And there's a good reason it sounds like advice a publicist would give me, because not only are you an author, you're also an entrepreneur yourself. You started your own publicity firm for tech companies in the mid-90s. You had 5 years of work experience. You had $500 to your name. And you made it happen, and ultimately in 2015, you sold your company to a very large company. Sounds like it was a nice win. But I'm curious, having worked in the tech industry all the time, we all see on the news when companies get themselves in trouble, and we see it because the action that they took when the trouble was discovered made it worse, right? If the first action they took made it better, we wouldn't have seen it in the news. And I want, if to the extent you can, because of the industry you're in, a lot of your work is in the public sphere. We've probably seen some of the projects that you've helped with. To the extent you can share an example of a company that took an action and made matters better instead of worse, I'd love you to share that. And if you can't on your own clients, just give us an example that you've seen in the media.
Sure. I can give you a typical example of what I've seen occur so many times. And it kind of goes like this. It's a hot young company with a disruptive technology, you know, pick your buzzword of the day. and they're going to announce their product and their solution. And it comes down to maybe the week before, you've got all your interviews lined up and you've got analysts excited and you've got an event back in the day when we used to do events. And you know what? There's no customer references. There's nobody using their product. And actually, the product's delayed. It's not even shipping. And so, you know, how do you handle a situation like that? Well, you have to peel back the onion and understand what really went on there and get to the truth. And there's so many times that I've heard how people think that PR is all about spin and, you know, just make the problem go away. But actually, the best PR gets to the truth and deals with it and finds a path forward. So each situation or crisis, if you will, is different. But the key is always to say, okay, here's what happened. The algorithm in the software didn't work. We need to make some modifications to the product. We're going to come back to you in a month or in 2 weeks or whatever the time frame is. And in the meantime, we do have, you know, some interested customers who are willing to give us a chance so that we can show them that actually this is a groundbreaking technology. I mean, I just made that up, but that is a typical scenario where you've got to lay down your sword and not blame it on someone else, own it, own the mistake. And, you know, by doing that, it's A, so refreshing because honesty is sort of a novelty right now, sadly, and B, you're giving helpful advice to people that you're building credibility by being honest, and maybe they'll give you a second shot the next time around.
That's a great note for us to end on. Sabrina, we want to thank you so much for joining us today on Mountain Money. Our guest has been Sabrina Horn. She is the author of Make It, Don't Fake It, Leading with Authenticity for Real Business Successes. Sabrina, thank you again.
You've been listening to KPCW's Mountain Money. If you enjoy the show, make sure to leave a review no matter where you listen.